This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello, this is a quick message for all of our Wise Men Say podcast listeners. I hope you're both paying attention. Well, about 3 years ago, well, exactly 3 years ago, because I've had one of those Facebook time hop things that tell you, we drove up to Scotland to speak to Alan Johnston, without doubt one of the most popular players to play for Sunderland during those Peter Reid days, the early Stadium of Light Revolution days. We were toying with the idea of doing a YouTube channel at the time, but families and real life stuff, and the fact people don't want to see our piats on the telly, mean that the pilot we recorded never made it to air. I know, dry your eyes and all that, but we've popped it into a bonus podcast for you to listen to. It's been massively edited because we spoke about the current day. That was the current day then, not the current day now. The structure isn't as heavily organised as when we go and speak to Dennis Smith and Malcolm Crosby, where we do a lot of research and try and make it into a timeline and really create a story for you. This was just improvised chat. That was always the idea. It was going to be on YouTube. Now it's in a podcast. Improvised chat is what it is. So this is us speaking to Alan Johnston. Hope you enjoy it. Because certainly we're fans of a certain generation and era where we had exciting times with the team you played in. Did you see yourself being a manager when you were playing?
You always, the natural progression is just to go back into football. Obviously that's all I've ever done, whether it's playing football or coaching, so no, that's good.
What kind of style do you play, Alan? Because obviously people remember you as an attacking player, but often that doesn't translate to when a player might become a manager. You say very different styles, don't you? But is that something you
like to do? You can just look at the amount of goals you've scored at the clubs I've been at. I'm very attack minded. I like to play usually with two strikers if it possibly can, so we can obviously score goals. That's basically try and pass the ball and get loads of crosses in the box, quite similar to what we've done at Sunderland.
So you play 4-4-2?
More or less, obviously different variations of that, like a diamond or sometimes 4-2-3-1 or whatever, so it just depends how we're going to play
the debate,
opposition.
The constant debate of 4-4-2 we have on the podcast, it's like always going on about how we can't really play it in the
these
Premier
days,
League.
But then again, it seems to be making a bit of a comeback, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's getting popular again, it's coming back around. Yeah, it's interesting though, Alan, when obviously you made your name for yourself, really, when you scored a hat-trick, didn't you, for Hearts at Rangers. I know you wanted to ask him a little bit.
Yeah, well, I've got a bit of a soft spot for Hearts. I've sort of followed them. You know, a lot of people in the North East England or in England in general, it's Rangers or Celtic, and for me and my dad, it was kind of Hearts. So, yeah, I suppose just a bit about your time there as well would be interesting to know how you found it. And
that was brilliant. Obviously, I was a Glasgow boy. I got an opportunity when I was 16 to sign for Hearts. Went in full-time, really enjoyed it, good club. And at a club like Hearts, you always get a chance of breaking through. So that was the main attraction. Obviously, I got in the first team quite young, and I was fortunate enough that day, as you said, in the right place at the right time, and managed to get.
I can remember that, like, you know, like they have the Soccer Saturday now, whatever the version that was then. I just remember the name kept springing up, and that's when people sort of learned the name Magic Johnston, wasn't it? Was that something that stuck with the players? Did you get
one? I think it was one of the. I think it was Craig Levine actually. He's been in charge at Scotland or whatever. He named me that. He'd said that on the television, his name's Magic, we call him Magic, and ever since then it's just really stuck.
And then obviously you moved to France as well, which is a bit unusual for British players. Obviously someone you played with at Sunderland, albeit briefly, Chris Waddle, did go to France as well.
Yeah.
Did you find it a culture shock?
It was totally different, but it was a great opportunity. I was only a young lad and I played in the European Championships with Scotland, and I think it was, we get in the semi-finals, it was like Spain, Italy, France and Scotland. And obviously somebody had seen me there, somebody had scouted me there, and the opportunity arose and it was a great chance to go and try the experience.
Mm. Is it something you'd recommend to young players coming through here if the time came to leave and the option was maybe a step up in Scotland, or it was a move abroad, even if it was maybe an obscure league?
Well, it was a top league.
Obviously that one wasn't, but not for that one. Not in terms of your own career. I mean, even from this level, if it was a slightly more obscure foreign move, do you think it helped? Just playing abroad helped you in general?
It was really good. No, I really enjoyed it. And as you said, it was totally different. The language was a problem with my accent. And I did try to learn, but it was difficult.
How do you say magic in French?
But I was lucky enough that towards the end of my first season there, that obviously Sunderland became interested in me.
That's interesting when you signed for Sunderland, Adam, because instantly you played for Sunderland at a very important time in the club's recent history, when they moved from Roker Park to the Stadium of Light. Now, a lot of people sort of look back now, don't they, and say, I wish we were at Roker Park and stuff. But we really took off those first two seasons at the Stadium of Light. But of course, it's often forgot that you scored the last ever league goal at Roker Park as well.
I'm sure me and Chris Waddle signed in the same day. I don't know if that's, is that right? You probably need
possibly,
to check
it was
that
a transfer window, wasn't it? Like, it was March then or something, wasn't it?
And I think I probably got about two lines at the bottom. Alan Johnson signed, because obviously Chris Waddle is a legend. Great opportunity. Obviously, you go to Roker Park and they get the last goal.
It's something you ever reflect on or think about?
No, it's
the last ever goal.
No, it's amazing. It's a header as well. That's the thing, it's a header. So must have hit off me, to be fair.
And then dropped the next game for Wimbledon when we went down, was that right?
I don't know if I started the game. I seem to remember
that Premier Passions documentary.
I remember I only played. I'm sure I might even have come on as a sub and then took off again after about 15 minutes because we lost a goal.
But
we
put
Niall on, big Connie.
But because it was a bit of a slow start in that respect, wasn't it? And we were speaking earlier in the car on the way up about our memories as fans from back then. And there was such a pivotal game in that season when Peter Reid was on the very brink, and Sunderland went to Reading. I think, was it October, did you say, November?
Oh,
and they lost 4-0.
September, maybe.
And the fans wanted Reid out. It looked like he'd lost the fan base, certainly.
Yeah.
And after that game, he changed the side a lot. The likes of yourself came into the side. Alex Rea came into the side. Mickey Gray went to left back, of course, who you struck that partnership up with.
Yeah.
Can you remember that time? And was there a conscious shift in the way the side played? Because suddenly, we finished on 40 points in the Premier League. But we were quite defensive and solid and organised, and it just seemed to all go out the window after that game, as if Reedy knew that he had to do something to keep his job.
I think Kevin Phillips came in the team at that time as well.
Yeah.
I'd been used to playing the right hand side, and I remember Nicky Summerbits had signed, and I'm thinking to myself, well, my days are numbered here, this isn't looking good. And I don't know if it was just maybe luck or whatever that he tried me in the left hand side, and obviously we struck out a good partnership with Mickey Gray, and obviously Kevin Phillips came in, he was in fire, to put it mildly.
Well, there was a lot of good partnerships in that side, wasn't there? Yourself and Mickey, Quinn and Phillips, obviously, some have been making on the other side.
Holloway as well before me.
Yeah, and Holloway,
Lee Clark in the middle of the park as well.
What was the dressing room like? Was there a lot of strong bonds as well there?
We had a great dressing room, and it always helps senior winning games as well. But as you said, we started the season slowly. Couldn't get in the team at the start of the season. And then after a couple of bad results, obviously he completely changed the team, and we got a chance.
It's also what the fans wanted, because we were looking at attendances in the first season, and a new brand new stadium, 42,000. People weren't sure if we were going to fill it. And the first season, at first, it wasn't full; it was 20,000 there. But because of the style of football, certainly by the time the season where we won the league, you were getting 40,000 there. So it must have been great to play a big full stadium as well.
I think I came to Sunderland at the right time, just when the club took off. Obviously going through Roker Park to the Stadium of Light, you could just see the club getting bigger and bigger, and obviously that contrasted with the obviously performances in the pitch as well.
How did the move from Bartlemy from Rent to Sunderland?
Peter Reid, he was up watching me at Hearts as well, So he came up to a few of the games. I'd spoke to him a couple of times as well. So obviously I was delighted to get a chance to come to Sunderland because it's a massive club.
That partnership with Mickey Gray is what a lot of people remember. Now, after you left, which we'll get on to in a little bit, we had Stefan Schwartz play out there a little bit, which suited us in the Premier League because Mickey Gray just bombed on, didn't he? Obviously he forgot about his defensive duties and Stefan would come in inside and cover him, wouldn't he? With yourself, it wasn't like that because the defenders had two of you coming. It was just attacking non-stop, wasn't it? It must have been a great... Did you work on that partnership or was it just natural? Because Quinn and Phillips always say, to this day, the claim that didn't work on that partnership, it was just natural.
I think it was natural as well. Mickey Gray's just he's a left winger, playing left back. He's brilliant at it. And that's why he ended up getting selected by England. And it just all came together. As you said, it was partnerships all over the park.
Mm-hmm. How did you feel the contrast, I suppose, going into that season where things started to take off compared to relegation at Roker? Sort of the change in setting, because obviously Roke was quite an intense small ground with terraces to this big new stadium, and as Steve says, it wasn't really full at first, but obviously as things picked up,
he still had the support.
Yeah,
you know, that's what I'm saying. Obviously I came at the tail end of the season and you could see the bank and the fans had, it was incredible. Mm-hmm. Week in, week out, they were there in their numbers getting right behind the team because they know how important it was.
When you think about that first season then at the stadium, we got the playoff final. That's still very raw in our minds, isn't it? I mean, I think I'm getting a bit of a lump in the throat just thinking about it.
I've never watched it.
Have you not? You never watched it back?
I couldn't even watch it now.
Not even now, you think? If it was repeated on Sky, and you couldn't sit and watch it now.
Because actually, we've got a copy.
Do you have what override memories from that day, though? Because it was a great day, apart from what happened at the end, wasn't it?
I know. To be fair, I just remember I was poor that day. It was a poor performance for us. We should have won. It was a roller coaster. Obviously it was, but what I remember for that day is Niall Quinn after the game, his reaction, his interview, just saying that next year we're going to win the league, we're going to run over the top of every team in this division, and that's what I remember. That's what the players remember.
The season obviously starts slowly. The Ren game, like Stephen touched on, was a bit of a turning point in terms of the change of the team, but I mean, were there any games in that run to the playoffs final? Because I think Sunderland, I think we'd all agree, we were the best team in the league towards the back end of the season, and just trying to think, you know, big games on the top of my head. I mean, Knock Forest away was in particular a massive game. I remember, I think you scored in that one, didn't you?
Just about to say that. I'm sure I scored in that one. They were all massive games around about that time, but I'm sure we were in a great position, and then we let it slip a little bit.
It was the Easter weekend, wasn't it?
Yeah, we fell into playoff places.
Was it the QBRs?
Yes.
Mike Sheeran, so
that was a good Friday, I think.
Yeah, it wasn't a good Friday. It down. I remember, and I think Quinny like dropped the. Quinny scored, and the keeper dropped the ball. But I think it was West Brom as a game after that as well, and we drew that one. But I think like we were saying,
but it probably wasn't the season for us to go up. We probably needed that extra season in the Championship.
Mm.
And you can see we improved. We get better and better as the season went on again.
Yeah.
When Quinny. You said you remember his sort of speech, and did you feel that extra focus in the pre-season? Did people work harder than they normally do, or was there a sense that you really wanted to put it right?
I don't think we worked harder. You always work hard, but we just had that belief, especially after the run we went on. Obviously, we started the season before slowly, and then we get better and better as the season went on, so we just carried that on throughout the next season.
We're talking about like 4-4-2 and stuff, and obviously that's the way Peter Reid played. And maybe it is going out of fashion or coming back in now, but how did it feel playing under Reid? Like, just in terms of the way he set you up, kind of what did he say? I mean, we've all seen Premier Passions, but sort of this was a bit after that, and things were a bit better. We were winning games, sort of. Yeah. What was that like?
Just the confidence in the team. Yeah, it's all about good players, and we were lucky enough we had good players, and you've got guys like Niall Quinn and Kevin Phillips up front who can produce a bit of magic out of nothing. But we all knew our jobs. He was a brilliant man manager, you know what I mean? Like, he'd be one of them, maybe no, like, didn't really go into a lot of tactics and whatever, but getting the most out of players individually and getting everybody to know their jobs obviously helped me improve as a player anyway.
Was it the best that season? 105 points, only 3 defeats. It was a case of turn up a game. Gareth touched on it earlier when we started steamrolling teams over, but particularly that season there was 5-0s, there was 7-0s, and you would turn up thinking, right, how many we're going to win by today, and generally we would. Was it like that for a player? And looking back, was that season in isolation the best you've had as a pro?
think it was the best Alfred as a pro. You just expected to win. You went into every game expecting to win, no matter who you were playing. It was like Kevin Phillips, for example. He was incredible. He just expected to score every game. And like, if he never scored, he couldn't believe he never scored. And that was just the mentality he had.
You mentioned again earlier on you thought you might have been out because you played on the right and you put on the left. Is that something you particularly enjoyed as well, coming inside? Because it was like Gareth mentioned again earlier, we were having these conversations and he was saying it was almost like everybody in the stadium knew what you were going to do, cut inside and curl it in, but the defenders couldn't stop you from doing it. And
yeah,
it was almost expected from us as a fan to see you do that.
And it always helps as well when you've got Niall Quinn at the back post. So
so if you overhit your shot,
it's no hard to miss him.
I was going to say, it was probably quite innovative in a sense, that sort of coming inside from the left.
Yeah,
very popular now, isn't it?
It's a lot popular, more popular now. You see a lot of teams doing that, obviously coming on their good foot and obviously shooting or creating chances.
We get to that summer. I remember being a young lad and relegation was still hurting, I think, from a couple of years before. And you mentioned that we perhaps went up at the right time, but as a fan, you didn't know that. You didn't know what was going to happen. You thought, is this side going to be good enough to stay up? And then I remember getting back from holiday and thinking, right, how are we going to strengthen this side? How are we going to make it better? And then suddenly hearing that Lee Clark was leaving, Alan Johnson wasn't going to play anymore, and Michael Bridges was leaving. What point in that summer did you sort of hear of interest from Rangers, and how did that come about?
It was obviously speculation in the media about me going to Rangers because I was a Glasgow boy. Obviously I had a couple of good seasons at Sunderland. But nothing had been sorted out. I was still a Sunderland player. I was still desperate to do well. It was still a great opportunity to go and play, so it was really frustrating that I was told that unless I signed a new contract, I wasn't going to play.
So Peter Reid just come out and ask you about it? If you said it was just speculation in the paper, did you not go into his office and say, I want to move at the end of the season, I'm not going to sign it?
I never ever said that, no. It just, obviously there was stuff in the paper, and it just says to us, if you're not signing a new contract, you're not going to play. And then it got to the point where I wasn't allowed to train, so I was training myself. So it was a difficult period.
Was that moving your mind though, Alan, personally?
It would have probably been a Glasgow boy if I had the opportunity to come up to Rangers, and it probably would have been a good move. It was the time we were having our first child as well. So it probably would have been a good move, and it would have been something I'd have looked at. But saying that, a year left in my contract, a lot can happen in a year.
It's a funny contrast to now, isn't it? Now you would just play. That's
no,
how
that's
it is.
People
play right up
it's
at the end
of
the contract.
I'd have chucked it, as I say.
No.
I love my time at Sunderland. Mm-hmm. It's a great club, and I was disappointed.
Did you try and put it right at all? Did you try and, were there any conversations where you thought that the problem could have been rectified halfway through the season? I guess from Peter Reid's perspective, the team were flying in the league, so he might not have felt the need
to go and
do that.
It was a difficult period, and I was just desperate to get back playing, and I think I'd said that to Peter Reid that I was wanting to play and be part of the team. I still had a year left in my contract. I hadn't signed any pre-contracts, so it was a big gamble.
Are there any regrets in hindsight about that? Because you moved to Rangers, obviously it's your home, it's the club you supported, it's where you're from, but you weren't a sort of prolific player for Rangers, I guess.
I went to Rangers and it was a massive squad, and it was difficult to play week in, week out. And to be fair, I ended up leaving there because I wasn't happy. I wasn't playing. Mm-hmm. I was only a bit part player. And
did you have any regret at that point? Did you think I wish I'd maybe done?
You always think about. I had my best time at Sunderland. I enjoyed playing at Sunderland the best. It was my favourite club. So you do have some regrets, yeah.
I think you had that a little look at what could have been in that at the end of that 105 point season we played there, like a friendly against Liverpool at the stadium. Was it like a centenary game
or something like
that?
Yeah.
I think you scored, didn't you? It was another one of those trademark coming inside in the top corner against Liverpool, and it was like then you ended up starting the season with Chris Lumsden, I think, playing in your position. I think it was like you say, like you come back from holiday. I do remember like.
But they dropped Stephen Schwartz, and he ended up getting put in the Danish boys as well, didn't they? He's just barely kicked the ball for them. I mean, it's an interesting time.
I mean, you were at the club, and you in a sense frozen out because you wouldn't sign the deal, and then you saw all these other players come in. Thomas Helmer comes in, and then barely kicks a ball. I mean, was that just, in essence, a little microcosm of football history, where if somebody didn't do a certain thing or act a certain way, they were turfed. Would they be managed differently now?
I think it's totally different now. I don't think you could afford to do that now.
No.
Just with the length of contracts, I'd just...
You're not going to have Bobby Sachs in the change room anymore, I think, I'm blind.
Oh, Sacco was class. Sacco was different class. I got a lot of respect for him. Great coach, great guy as well. He was never too pleased when you get beat as well, right enough. He used to take a huff, but nah, he was a great guy. And to be honest with you, see Peter Reid as well. I know that he froze me out at the last year of my contract. But he was a great manager. To be fair, I think he made me the player I was.
That's like nice to hear, I suppose. You know, even after all that, like, maybe it didn't end so well, but it was still it's good to hear that you loved your time at Sunderland and playing for him.
Being part of a successful team, he taught me how to play the position properly. I think you get the most out of me, so for that, you always appreciate it.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I suppose as well during that season you went to Bolton on loan. I believe you played for Allardyce, is that right? How did you find him as a manager? Obviously, you mentioned Advocaat at Rangers. I suppose it would be interesting to get an insight into why things might have went wrong under Advocaat, if you've got any thoughts on that.
I don't know, obviously Big Sam, obviously worked with him at Bolton. He's done really well everywhere he's went, and he's a guy with loads of experience. And he's one of them, similar to Peter Reid, manages to get the best out of people. That year at Bolton, I think we got in two semi-finals, FA Cup semi-final and the League Cup semi-final, with the players we had. So it was an amazing achievement, and it just shows you that obviously his career's just blossomed from there, really.
Did you think that was going to happen at the time? When you saw him, did you think he was any different over other managers you played for? Did he seem more forward thinking?
He was right into sports science, wasn't he? At that stage, maybe never had the facilities at Bolton, but you could see that he was forward thinking with some of the things he was trying to do there.
What about Advocaat Rangers? Anything in particular that stood out there? Or
discipline, I think that was the main thing that would stand up. You think about Advocaat, that's
strange.
That's the way it was at Rangers. Obviously, he was managing a lot of big players, and he managed to control them, which is easier said than done when you're dealing with big players.
What about the rest of your career then? How it happened after that? You know, just remind us about how, because you end up playing in defensive midfield at one point, didn't you?
And at Middlesbrough as well.
I know, so you didn't mention Middlesbrough there.
I was going to say, you're at Middlesbrough.
We just try and cut that.
It's interesting.
We pretend that didn't happen.
Well, it's interesting that sort of two ex-Sunderland wingers, yourself and Julio Arca, both ended up playing sort of central midfield, and sort of both ended up there. I don't know. There's did you sort of enjoy coming back to the area? I know it's not exactly Sunderland, but. It's the northeast, isn't it? You know.
At that time, I thought there might have been a chance of coming back to Sunderland, but it never quite worked out. And then,
so who was manager then?
Peter Reid was still manager.
He was going to bring you back.
Well, I was hoping he was going to bring you back. It never worked out that way. And then eventually got the chance to go to Middlesbrough and work with Steve McLaren, which was a good opportunity as well.
And then you came back up to Scotland after that.
Came back up. Towards the end of my career at Middlesbrough, I broke my toe a few times, so I was struggling with injury a few times. I was out for the majority of my last season at Middlesbrough. So eventually I came back up the road to get the move to Kilmarnock and reunited with one of my old Scottish managers, Jim Jeffries. Yeah. Still keep in touch with guys like Kevin Ball, obviously guys like that are legends, and it's good to see them still part of the club.
Where did you live when you played for us? That's got to be interesting.
Just outside Durhamshire, Burn Village.
Ah, right, there you go.
So it was brilliant, I loved it.
Well, the drinking culture was still in. drink?
Well, I don't drink, to be fair. Don't drink, but there was a few of them, obviously, a few drinks. I mean, I'd say Niall Quinn was partial at a couple of Guinnesses.
Oh, yeah.
I wouldn't say there's a drinking culture now.
So is there a goal like you score for Sunderland that sticks in your mind, particularly the quality of goal or just how important it was?
Put me right under pressure there. That's terrible.
They were all the same, weren't they?
I know.
Couldn't sign.
I always remember that Portsmouth played Portsmouth home and beat them 2-1.
Yeah.
And I think we're 1-0 up, and then I think Perez and Williams had a mix up and Paul scored for them. And it was like right at the death of the season when we're looking to get automatic promotion. And I remember you scored a goal in that game. Do you remember that one?
I think the semi-finals, the playoffs.
Oh, the playoffs, that was one, yeah.
Because the atmosphere that night.
Oh, yeah. That's the best I think I've seen.
It was electric.
Even if you think about some of the Newcastle games, I think that Sheffield United semi-final was the best atmosphere I could have
seen. I think that's probably the best atmosphere I've ever played.
That wasn't that game. I couldn't afford to go to that one. And at the time we didn't have a lot of money, so it was either gamble and go to Wembley,
yeah,
or go to the semi-final. So we gambled,
God,
and we went to Wembley. But I missed that game. Everyone always scores.
It's a bit like
stadium.
That, yeah,
a goal that sticks out with me. I can't remember the score or anything, but I remember when Bortler just signed Jessica Lydon, and he struggled, didn't he? At first, he really struggled, and I remember you sort of spotted it. He was fumbling everything, and I remember you just took a shot and he kind of just fumbled it in the goal. I remember the players celebrating, sort of pointing at him and laughing, which was hilarious as a fan to watch at the side. Can you remember that at all? You'll have ended up
there. I'm sure it was in the top corner.
Yeah, I think he pushed it in the top corner.
He scored a hat trick at Huddersfield, I remember that one. That was the
first still get the ball. That's terrible. I forgot.
Oh, that's terrible.
Right. Still
that's
get the ball.
Last minute against Birmingham, I remember that one, but that was for Guy Mowbray's commentary. Do you remember that one?
I remember that as well, because we were struggling second half in it later.
Yeah, it was really late in the game. I think Danny had a bonus score for them. But it was like that period right at the end of the season where we just started to get a bit jittery and then ended up in the playoffs, which was a bit of a shame.
Me being me, I never enjoyed watching the Sunderland team as much as I did during that period, but because we won so many games, weirdly enough, it's the bad stuff you remember, sort of like losing against Barnsley when we hadn't lost a game that season. And I think there was one against Swindon where you were put through 1-on-1 and put it wide. I don't know if you can remember that.
You always forget the ones.
I don't blame you. I don't know why I can remember it. I must just torturing myself.
None of us could remember that.
It's
he's coming up and saying, can you remember that time you missed that sitter?
I must just be one of those negative people. Can't help but focus on the misery.
If you had to pick somebody from your time at Sunderland who you would say was the best player you played with?
Oh, Kevin Phillips by far. He was exceptional. Just even in training, he'd do shooting drills, and it was impossible. He was scoring nearly every shot, everything he hit went in. So it's incredible to think that he got released with Southampton as a youngster playing left back, and then going to have the career that he had.
It's amazing, isn't it? What about best player you played with anywhere else? I suppose you played with some, especially at Rangers, you would think.
No, there was a lot of good players, but. Still,
Phillips.
Kevin's probably.
How was Chris Waddle in training, even at that end of his career?
He was a great guy as well. You could see, obviously, he still had the quality. Might not have the legs to get about the park, but I think my debut was at Newcastle, and there wasn't any fans allowed. I always remember that. And Chris Waddle was playing, and he still had the magic touches.
I think you should get something framed with you scoring that last ever goal at Roger Park to remind you.
Somebody gave me a little frame with a certificate inside it, just saying I was the last person to score.
In hindsight, we should have got a picture.
Have you got any
outstanding or overriding memories? Obviously, people ask about goals and players and all that, but is there anything that happened at Sunderland in your time there or a moment that'll always stick in your mind?
The playoffs, obviously. Obviously, for the worst reasons. And I remember going back to the hotel after it, and it was obviously a bit of an anticlimax. And big Richard Ord, he gets up on the table and starts singing a song and just trying to cheer everybody up, but it never worked. I was a great lad because he wasn't even playing that day, and he was just trying to lift everybody's spirits.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.